This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Hear about Central Illinois vaccination rates. Vaccine skeptic Susan Mitchell says media make too much of the issue, considering how little faith people have in government and drug companies.
So no one trusts these organizations except for when it comes to vaccines, which is just super interesting to me.
Eric Stock reports there are a few vaccination rate trouble spots in Bloomington Normal, but herd immunity is largely okay. Plus, a lack of diversity in culture has broad implications for society, but a lack of diversity in scholarship, especially the sciences, is a really big deal, according to an IWU scientist. Ryan Denham has more. And John Norton gives us the music of Third Street Down. All that and a GLT News update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Vaccination rates remain high in McLean County overall, despite what the medical community says are efforts by skeptics to sow confusion over settled science. Health leaders claim those efforts put herd immunity at risk. GLT's Eric Stock reports on responses to measles outbreaks, how physicians in schools try to ensure children get their shots, and how anti-vaxxers work the system to avoid immunization.
Health experts say skepticism about vaccines is the main reason measles is spreading. 20 years after the highly contagious disease was considered no longer a threat in the United States. The World Health Organization lists vaccine hesitation as one of the 10 greatest threats to global health. Illinois is one of about two dozen states to report a measles outbreak this year, and the number of cases nationwide is approaching 900. It prompted the Illinois Department of Public Health to launch a public safety campaign. One component is to examine parts of the state where vaccination rates have fallen below 95%, what's called herd immunity, a threshold that limits the threat of an outbreak.
Given the fact that we are 98%, well, that tells you that they're just small pockets here and there that are at risk.
Dr. Ngozi Ezike is director of the Illinois Department of Public Health. She says 9% of Illinois schools currently have vaccination rates below 95%.
There are pockets throughout that are religious, you know, faith-based versus other reasons. It's a multitude of different reasons is why we are below our thresholds in certain communities.
Illinois mandates children get vaccines for measles and other diseases before they enroll in school. There are exceptions for medical and religious reasons. Parents have to get a doctor's waiver. All but three states allow non-medical exemptions. Oregon may become the fourth to eliminate religious exemptions after a measles outbreak sickened more than 70 people in neighboring Washington. Illinois State Board of Education data shows most McLean County schools have high vaccination rates, well within the herd immunity range.
Because the vast majority of our students are immunized, we do not have a great concern. That doesn't mean that you do not take precautions.
That's District 87 Superintendent Barry Riley. District 87 had just one school below the threshold for herd immunity. That happened because the numbers went to the state before all transfer students produced proof of immunization. All of them have since done so. Riley says it's not easy to combat skepticism about vaccine safety.
Information that's put out there, whether it's through social media or through other means to publicize or promote, that there's a reason why people market things. Whatever it is, it's because marketing works.
And one of the most vocal skeptics is a Bloomington chiropractor.
In the media, they're making measles out to be the next deadly disease. And I just don't believe that is true.
Dr. Susan Mitchell suggests measles is just the latest scare the medical community and the media are using to prey upon the public.
If you look back in past years, we were all going to die of the swine flu. We were all going to die of Ebola. We were all going to die of West Nile virus. And so it was very scary. And so I think that now, this year, it's a big concern for measles.
Mitchell acknowledges measles can be serious, but suggests vaccines also pose health risks for many. She says doctors look past that to push more vaccines.
No one blindly trusts our government. No one blindly trusts our, even the pharmaceutical companies, you know, when we have an opioid epidemic right now. So no one trusts these organizations except for when it comes to vaccines, which is just super interesting to me.
The World Health Organization reports 110,000 people died from measles in 2017 out of 6.7 million cases. That's a death rate of 1.6%. Data from the Centers for Disease Control show the rate of severe complications and death from vaccines is far less than 0.02%. Mitchell says several of her chiropractic clients have experienced harmful side effects from vaccines. She claims in some cases, doctors ignored them. None of Mitchell's clients were willing to talk to GLT for this story for fear of public backlash, something Mitchell says she feels too.
I'm not a popular person. You know, I mean, I've been called all kinds of names on social media. If I'm 100% honest, I almost backed out of today because I am putting myself at risk. You know, there are a lot of people out there that are so strong in their belief systems, which in my experience, most of the people that are super strong in their belief system and really get super angry about it are the ones that are the least educated about it.
Mitchell's two children, ages 16 and 19, were not vaccinated as children. She says her religious beliefs conflict with the use of aborted fetal cells to make some vaccines. Religion is the most common type of exemption in McLean County. The two schools, which fall below the state-recommended 95% herd immunity, are faith-based. Calvary Christian Academy, a K-12 school in Normal, has a 93% vaccination rate in the 2018-19 school year, while the lowest vaccination rate in McLean County is at Cornerstone Christian Academy in rural Bloomington. Nearly 7% of its students have religious exemptions, lowering the school's vaccination rate to 92%. That surprised Doug Pavey, who is head of the school.
Day to day, you have so much on your plate, I tend not to think about these specific details sometimes until it's brought to my attention. But I think what I would like to do, you know, is put our nurse on notice simply to track this percentage now that we know that we're below that threshold.
Schools face no consequences for low vaccination rates. Pavey says the state hasn't contacted Cornerstone. Pavey says he would like to see a higher percentage of vaccinated students, but respects family decisions.
I wouldn't be opposed to working to internally to try to increase it. I'm just, in my mind, I'm not like sure what steps we could take other than, you know, talk to the families and attempt to convince them to reconsider.
Doctors largely support the case for vaccines. Like any profession, opinions vary. Some doctors are more sympathetic to vaccine hesitancy. Joseph Flint, a doctor who runs Delvin Pediatrics, touts himself as vaccine choice on his website. It says Dr. Flint has a special interest in the role of natural and homeopathic treatments for common medical conditions. He declined to be interviewed for this story. The vaccination rate in Delvin Elementary School in Tazewell County, it's below 93%. Many doctors struggle with the tension between respecting a family's religious objections and the duty to promote public health. What's to stop a family from claiming a religious exemption simply because they have a skeptic's objection to vaccines? Nothing. Dr. Kimberly Marshall is a pediatrician with Advocate Healthcare in Bloomington. She was one of several doctors who told us it's not a physician's place to ask.
It's much easier, like when you have a group like this, some of these ultra-Orthodox Jewish groups that say that, you know, that certain vaccines aren't kosher. I mean, that's obvious. I mean, that's easier to document. You know, you pretty much hear, I mean, you have to take people's word for it.
The Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation licenses physicians in the state. Department spokesman Paul Isaac says doctors must explain the health risks of not getting the measles to the parent or guardian, but it's left up to schools to determine the validity. Isaac says he's not aware of any doctor failing to honor the requirement or if there are consequences for failing to do so. Mark Jontery, superintendendent for the Regional Office of Education for McLean, DeWitt, Livingston, and Logan counties, says his office conducts random examinations of each school's immunization record, but that's to ensure each student either has a medical record or a waiver. There's nothing more doctors can do to prompt a family to immunize except refuse to take them as patients. Some doctors won't. Vaccine skeptic Susan Mitchell suggests money matters more to the doctors who reject non-vaxxers. Pediatrician Kimberly Marshall acknowledges some doctors may have a financial incentive to keep non-vaxxers away.
Certainly, there are ways that insurance companies look at how good of a physician we are, and one of those things can be the immunization rates of our patient base, and that can impact, you know, how we're rated as a physician for that insurer, and that may affect our reimbursement.
Marshall says other physicians may refuse anti-vaxxers because they don't want to risk spreading the disease at their practice. Marshall says she would not turn away a family because of a vaccine stance.
I personally historically have taken patients that won't immunize because I feel like education is important, and I would like to have the opportunity to discuss and build relationships with families so that over time, hopefully, they learn to trust the word of their physician and take our recommendations.
Marshall says she has converted some families into believing in vaccinations. School vaccination rates, though, leave another population of at-risk children uncounted. Marshall says she has about 20 anti-vaxxer families who simply homeschool their children.
The problem we run into is the vast majority of the people I have that don't immunize don't attend school. So, you know, at least they attend school at home. I mean, I would say I have very few patients who go to public school that get exemptions.
The Central Illinois medical community has largely unified around a nationwide vaccination campaign. Advocate Healthcare has sent thousands of letters to pediatric clients urging patients to get their children vaccinated. Erin Traeger is a pediatrician with Advocate Children's Medical Group in Normal and helped lead the effort. Traeger says he sympathizes with the parents whose child may have been injured or become ill after getting a vaccine.
And then the parents deeply believe that their child was harmed by the vaccines. How can you not feel that? How can you not, you know, as a human being, say, I feel for that person and I don't want that for my child as well. So I understand where they're coming from. Having said that, you know, the science is there.
Data from the Centers for Disease Control show the most severe reactions to vaccines happen in one out of 667,000 patients. Traeger partly blames some vaccine mistrust on the medical community itself for sending mixed messages at a time when authorities believed measles was a disease of the past.
Parents would say, well, what about this? Can it cause these problems or something like that? And the doctors that I would work with would say, well, you know what? We think it's safe, but what if it's not? But I still think you should get your vaccines. You know, that's wrong. From the very beginning, the American Academy of Pediatrics and the international scientific community said, no, this isn't right. This is safe. This is good.
Traeger's experience illustrates the varying ways medical professionals wish to address the measles. Advocate has no formal policy whether doctors may grant vaccine exemptions. Traeger says no doctors at Advocate Bowman would grant an exemption. He claims there are only a few in all of Bloomington Normal who would. It turns out Traeger is wrong. Data provided by Unit 5 schools shows 21 physicians in the Normal-based school system alone granted at least one vaccine exemption during the 2018-19 school year. Dr. Paul Peterson, chief medical officer at OSF Healthcare in Bloomington, is president of the Illinois State Medical Society.
There are physicians who have their own personal opinions, as there are patients who have their own personal opinions about vaccination. I think the medical literature would suggest strongly that vaccinations are far and away more helpful than they are damaging.
Peterson says while the medical society stance is that vaccines are largely safe and effective, and exemptions should come only for medical reasons, it's not a body that would punish doctors who are free with exemptions.
Physicians have wide latitude in their decision making.
When doctors refuse to take patients who resist vaccinations, those families often end up at the county health department. Tammy Brooks, the interim McLean County Health Department director, says county clinics have seen an increased number of families, which she attributes to more doctors refusing to accept the unvaccinated.
It is very concerning, especially to our most vulnerable population, very young children who've not been vaccinated yet, as well as anyone who has health issues that would compromise their immune system and are not able to get the vaccine. That kind of leaves them wide open for exposure.
Brooks says she has noticed an increase in skepticism about vaccines in recent years, which she says has forced staff to add another layer of responsibility to educate. Health Department nurse Sue Keem says the most persuasive case for vaccination is to bluntly tell parents the risks of going unprotected.
We tell them about things that can happen to their child and allowing them to make the choice then. I think when you know your child could die from the disease, it really hits home.
The recent measles scare prompted Illinois State University to alert its entire campus community about the threat, urging all faculty and staff to make sure they are up to date on their vaccinations. Unlike students, university employees don't have to show proof of vaccinations unless there was an outbreak. Then, anyone potentially exposed to measles, even being in the same classroom, has to produce vaccination papers or face a 3-week quarantine. That poses a challenge on college campuses, where in some cases, faculty and staff got their shots many years or even decades ago and may not remember which vaccines they did or didn't get. Susan Rausch is a staff physician at ISU's Student Health Services. She can speak from experience. Rausch says she learned only a few years ago, after an inquiry from her boss and a close examination of her immunization records, she never received the mumps vaccine, which a blood test confirmed.
Yeah, and I'm highly educated. I think. Regarding vaccines, I should say. So you would have thought that I would have picked it up on myself. But again, when I went back to my vaccine record, I realized I was in the age group that got things individually, and I wasn't in the age group to get an MMR. And so for whatever reason, I slipped through the mumps vaccine.
ISU reports its student vaccination rates consistently surpass 99%. Rausch says that's because the university is vigilant in making sure students prove they're immunized as children, and if not, they encourage the student to make the choice now that they are old enough to decide for themselves.
As I sometimes tell students who I meet who are not vaccinated, it doesn't mean that your parent was a bad parent. Your parent was doing what they believed was best for you. So also at Student Health, we really do encourage students when we meet them to rethink that choice, because it's never too late to vaccinate.
Students at ISU who fail to produce immunization records within a month of the start of classes face a $50 fine and can't register for class the next semester unless they get their shots. Illinois Wesleyan University reports it has two students returning for the 2019-20 school year who have religious exemptions. Heartland Community College does not have to collect immunization data because there is no student housing there. Tammy Brooks with the McLean County Health Department says it's become easier to downplay how serious measles can be since Americans have had so little exposure to it.
People often don't have a complete understanding of those diseases because a lot of them we haven't seen in so long. And certainly the generations coming up now with children, they didn't see some of those diseases because vaccines subdued those.
Even though the medical community has boosted education efforts on the effectiveness of vaccines and the risks of going without, they don't expect skepticism will ever go away. I'm Eric Stott.
The Centers for Disease Control reports the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine is 93% effective. A second dose brings that effectiveness to 97%.
Support for GLT comes from Dr. Matt Fraker and his staff at the Prairie Oak Veterinary Center, protecting the human companion animal bond, caring for life of all kinds, and proud supporter of the Parklands Foundation. Details about Parklands Nature Preserves at 454-8606. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, what's going on in Springfield as the spring legislative session runs down? We'll tell you in just a moment. Culture is hindered in all sorts of ways by a lack of diversity. The missing voices in policymaking, too many white men running the justice system, even the movies that never get made. But a lack of diversity in the hard sciences impacts the world in big ways. The questions about the building blocks of life that don't get asked, the problems that don't get solved. GLT's Ryan Denham speaks with Illinois Wesleyan University chemistry professor Becky Rosner about the lack of diversity in her field and what she's trying to do to fix it.
If you look at the U.S. population as a whole, it's about 18% Hispanic and Latino and about 13% Black. If you look at the membership of the American Chemical Society, which is the professional organization for chemists that includes both industrial chemists and educators, you will find that it's only about 2% Black. Black and 4% Hispanic Latino. So that speaks to the extent of the disparity that we see in the chemical sciences. In terms of women in chemistry, if you look at those earning the bachelor's degree, things are pretty equitable. About 49% of bachelor's degree earners in chemistry are women. But if you look at the PhD degree, then it's only 37% who are women. And then if you go on even further than that and look at who's tenured professors at major research universities or who's in leadership roles in industry, you find that the number of women dwindle as you kind of move up that hierarchical ladder of management and so forth in chemistry.
What are some of the big reasons for this?
I think it's a complex set of reasons. Part of it is what happens before young people reach the higher education area, different systematic disadvantages and biases that disproportionately impact women and members of underrepresented groups when they're going through school in terms of what people believe they can do and the encouragement and mentoring that they're receiving and the resources that they have as they go through their earlier education. But higher education shares responsibility for this as well. Our disciplines haven't always been as welcoming as they should be to members of underrepresented groups, and that's one of the things we're trying to work at right now at Illinois Wesleyan.
Is there something in the culture of the professional sciences that can be off-putting or not welcoming to certain groups of people? And if so, can you be more specific about what that might be?
One of the challenges we see with our beginning students is that we're mixing together students from all different backgrounds who've had all different prior opportunities. And for students who maybe haven't had all the science opportunities in high school, either because they weren't available to them or they didn't see themselves doing it or their mentors didn't see themselves doing it, it can be pretty overwhelming to be in a classroom where it feels like the other students know this already and have done all this before, and you feel like a fish out of water, that those around you, that, you know, somehow you haven't had the same experiences. So one of the things that we try to do with some of the new programs that we're initiating is to create a sense of community for all of our students who are coming in, and especially for students who we think might have some of those disadvantages, to kind of stack the deck in their favor in terms of building community so they don't feel like they're alone as they navigate this new place.
And what are some examples of the things you've done at Illinois Wesleyan that you feel have been successful at reaching some of these folks?
Well, the first thing I think I'd like to share is a program that we started in 2014. We call it SPLICE. It stands for Summer Program for Leadership Inquiry and Campus Engagement. And what we've been doing there is inviting 12 or so students to campus each summer, students who we think would benefit from an extra boost in getting started to have a smooth transition. These are often students who are the first in their generation to go to college, or maybe students who come from more poorly resourced high schools, or students who maybe didn't have all the chances to take the advanced and AP science courses when they were in high school. And so we've been bringing those students to campus for a week in the summer, and the main purpose of that is, first of all, to get them to form a community with one another, a community of people who share their interest in science. We also get them started in the laboratory doing mini research projects so they can see some of the opportunities that lie ahead. And we set them up with some online general chemistry preparation work so that hopefully they feel a little bit more confident and comfortable when they get in the chemistry classroom in the fall.
And then what is this next STEM scholarship program you have there?
So the Next STEM scholarship program is really exciting. It is a partnership between Illinois State, Heartland Community College, and Illinois Wesleyan, and members of the community, not-for-profit organizations, and folks like the Chamber of Commerce and the Bloomington Normal Advantage Group. And what we've done is we've applied to the National Science Foundation, and we've secured $4.6 million in funding to offer scholarships to Central Illinois students who have high financial need, students who are eligible for the federal Pell Grants, for example. And if those students attend Illinois State, Illinois Wesleyan, or Heartland, and they are studying an eligible discipline and they apply to our program, they could be eligible for up to $10,000 a year in financial aid for 4 years of working on their bachelor's degree in STEM.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm speaking with Becky Rosner, Chair and Professor of Chemistry at Illinois Wesleyan University. She recently earned the Stanley C. Israel Regional Award for Advancing Diversity in the Chemical Sciences from the American Chemical Society. It was for her work furthering diversity and promoting inclusivity in the sciences. I read a comment of yours that you said the professional science world as a field too often rewards intensity over balance and a diversity of interests. What did you mean by that?
Well, as someone who went to a liberal arts college and now teaches at one, I've sort of always grown up around the idea that it's good to have a variety of academic interests and personal interests and things like that. And the chemistry world and the science world does sort of favor people who have extreme intensity of purpose. And indeed, some of the biggest breakthroughs in science and engineering have come as a result of that intensity of purpose. So it's certainly not an all bad thing, but it also sometimes discourages young people from going into the sciences because they feel like it's such an all or nothing endeavor.
And it doesn't have to be?
And I don't think it has to be. There are certainly a lot of careers where you can have be deeply involved in science, but maintain other interests and have balance. So science doesn't have to be an all or nothing kind of endeavor. And that's one of the messages I'd like to get across to young people who are thinking about going into it.
Well, what about you personally as a girl or young woman growing up? How did you become interested in science as a career path?
I think it really started with a love of the outdoors. Not that I ever particularly wanted to be a biologist, but I loved being outside, exploring things, building things. That was sort of the kind of kid I was. And I certainly had encouragement from my family. My mom was a medical technologist, and I have an aunt on my father's side who's a chemistry, physics, math teacher. So certainly when I expressed interest in those things, there was a lot of encouragement at home, and I think that made a big difference.
And did you, as you were kind of moving up the ladder of professional science and obviously reaching the position you are now as chair and professor of chemistry at Illinois Wesleyan, did you have strong female mentors who were looking out for you and that you learned from throughout that time?
I certainly did have some strong female mentors and maybe even more so, some wonderful male mentors who were committed to equity in the sciences and encouraging women, and that meant just as much as the female mentors.
Yeah. What does chemistry and what do professional sciences lose when there is a lack of diversity in the people that are performing those jobs? What are the things that are not pursued, the questions that are not asked, the things that are not done as a result of those people not being in the room?
Well, I think there can be a lot of things. For one, just science sets out to solve problems oftentimes. And when you have more people at the table, you have more people suggesting the sorts of problems that ought to be solved. And there are certainly a lot of unmet needs with regard to science in technology, and when we broaden the group of people who are thinking about what problems to tackle next, I think we can have some major breakthroughs. We also lose the diversity of experiences that people bring to the problem-solving table. So people who've had different paths in life in terms of different jobs before they became scientists, in terms of different cultural expectations, might think of creative solutions that I wouldn't. And so I think that's very important. From the point of view of specifically gender and things, what's good for women in science in terms of a family-friendly workplace and flexibility and life balance is also equally good for men. So these improvements in a welcoming and flexible work environment are to everyone's benefit, not just to those who might be underrepresented right now.
You've done some very tangible things at Illinois Wesleyan to address this issue. You talked about the SPLICE program over the summer, where you bring a dozen or so students in for a week of really cool work. You've got, you're part of this broader scholarship program for area students going into some of these STEM fields. But what if you had a magic wand and you could wave a magic wand in a bigger way, in a broader way, to maybe affect this issue on a national level? What are the one, two, three things that you would do to address this issue, big picture?
Really, the most important thing would be some intensive work to keep young students from falling behind in things like reading and mathematics, because the path to these STEM fields is so much easier if you're up to grade level in math and reading and things in the early grades and end up being one of those students who takes algebra in eighth grade and takes calculus when you're still in high school and gets into those second layer science courses, the advanced placement courses or the second year of chemistry or physics or biology. Those sorts of advantages make a huge difference when students start at the university, and you can only get everybody there if you start early in the educational process in not letting folks fall between the cracks.
So, Becky, you recently earned the Stanley C. Israel Regional Award for Advancing Diversity in the Chemical Sciences. That is from the American Chemical Society. It was for your work furthering diversity and promoting inclusivity, which is all the things we've been talking about today. What did it mean to you to earn that recognition for this?
Well, it was certainly an honor, and I'm grateful to my colleagues who nominated me. First, I'd like to say, though I received the award, all of these efforts that I received it for have been team efforts. The SPLICE program has been a team effort, along with several of my colleagues in biology and chemistry at Illinois Wesleyan, and I want to make a shout out to them. And the NextSTEM program is an even larger effort that extends to several colleagues at Illinois State and Heartland Community College and in the community, and to current and former administrators at Illinois Wesleyan. And so a shout out to them as well. None of this would have been possible for were not for that teamwork. The other thing is, it is certainly sobering to look at the list of people who've earned these awards in the past for diversity and to still see all the work that we have to do. So it's a call for all of us to work harder to bring people along and to try to lessen some of these disparities.
That's Becky Rosner, Chair and Professor of Chemistry at Illinois Wesleyan University, talking with GLT's Ryan Denham. By the way, there are still some of those NextSTEM scholarships available to Central Illinois College students going into the STEM fields, even for the fall 2019 semester. Find out more at nextstem.org.
The news you need when you want it. That's what you'll find at our website, WGLT.org. The latest local news stories, plus reports from Springfield, Washington, and around the world. You can also subscribe to our podcast and catch up on your favorite GLT features, from GLT's Grow to John Norton's music interviews and everything in between. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, the music of Third Street Down. Illinois lawmakers have yet to settle many issues. With only a week left in the spring legislative session, IPR's Statehouse reporting team of Daisy Contreras, Jacqueline Driscoll, Dusty Rhodes, and Brian Mackey give us this roundup. Brian Mackey starts with budget negotiations.
Well, what's new is, I guess, not that new. The Republicans are saying that they're being excluded from the process, or they're worried about being excluded from the process. Democrats say they want to take time and make sure things are done right. But it's all being helped along by some relatively good budget news we got a couple of weeks ago, which is the so-called April surprise. $1.5 billion of extra money that was paid in taxes in April for the current year coming in. So it's still relatively early in the budget process, but they keep negotiating. Democrats say they hope it will be a bipartisan budget. Republicans say they hope so too, but they're a little more skeptical, of course, being in the super minority in both the House and Senate.
And Dusty, you've been covering several plans about education. Teacher licensure has been a big issue on your beat. What's happening with those?
Yeah, it's important because it plays so directly into the teacher shortage. So there's a couple of big bills that would address licensure, and you know, not surprisingly, they're both sponsored by legislators who were school teachers. So one of them is Representative Sue Scher of Decatur, and her bill would suspend what's called the basic skills test for about 6 years. It would suspend that requirement for about 6 years to allow the Illinois State Board of Education to kind of reevaluate the situation. That test has kept a lot of potential teachers out of the pipeline, especially minorities.
And Mary, another issue has been infrastructure. What's the latest?
So there are several proposals, plans floating around. Senators and representatives have been negotiating their own plans, and the governor announced his $41.5 billion proposal last week, which includes both roads and bridges, that horizontal piece, as well as the vertical, the buildings and state facilities. Lawmakers have been hearing from just about everybody in the last couple of months about what they need in an infrastructure bill. So mayors and county engineers and business folks saying they need to fix the roads. And then you also have colleges and universities and elementary schools, high schools, all of them saying they have billions in backlogged maintenance.
And Jacqueline, the marijuana legalization proposal is still under heavy construction.
When we saw the bill language unveiled just a couple weeks ago, that was something that the sponsors, the governor, said that this was still a work in progress. It wasn't the final bill. This wasn't the, you know, we hadn't seen the last of the changes. It was just basically getting the language out and allowing negotiations to take place in the public eye. There was a Senate committee last week on the proposal where they were able to kind of flesh out some of the details in the bill. We were able to hear more from the Republicans about some of their concerns, a couple of those that we will watch for changes to come in the very near future. And Daisy, you have been covering the topic of gambling expansion throughout the state. What are the odds we'll see a bill pass before the end of May?
I've been focusing on sports betting, and as of the taping of this conversation, we are still waiting on final language. We've seen several proposals over the last month taking into consideration many concerns from various groups, including the casino industry, video gaming, and those who are worried about gambling addiction. And I think that's something that we should be looking out for is if sports wagering will become a part of a larger gambling expansion plan, which would include more casino licenses and an increase in video gaming taxes.
That's IPR's State House reporting team of Daisy Contreras, Brian Mackey, Dusty Rhodes, and Jacqueline Driscoll. The Illinois Department of Corrections did not fare well in a recent state audit. Among the findings was that the agency could not account for 3,568 pieces of equipment. When IPR State House editor Brian Mackey started looking into it, he ended up finding a bigger story about the challenges of pursuing efficiency in state government.
When you look at the Department of Corrections property database, items that can't be found are not declared missing. Rather, they're unlocated. Among the unlocated items at the end of the last budget year are a Coronado four-station exercise machine, two four-slice toasters, and a Heritage salad bar with sneeze guard. Some of the stuff seems clearly outdated and not likely to be of much use. Who wants a compact computer from 1999, let alone an IBM Wheelwriter 6 typewriter, which first entered state service in 1986? But there are also projectors, dozens of radios, and scores of newer computers that might be useful, or at least should be accounted for.
Property control is important, and your vigilance at that is very telling about your own accountability.
This is Frank Martino, Illinois' Auditor General. He says this problem is not unique to the Department of Corrections, that unlocated property is pretty common across state government.
You find that with a lot of the bigger agencies. Human Services, you'll find a lot of the same, where you have property that may move between buildings.
Martino also says it's worth noting that just because property can't be located during an audit, that doesn't necessarily mean it's been lost or stolen.
Now, some of those might be that they took this chair and they put it in the other room and nobody changed it over. So it's not that they're in all cases missing. Theft is a small part of it, but very rarely, more times than not, it's they need better training, more people doing inventory and tracking.
Ultimately, better control of state equipment is about making government more efficient, which is an idea both Democrats and Republicans like to talk about.
The people that I've hired in my cabinet are looking within those agencies to find places in which we can bring some cost savings and efficiencies.
We need to see our expenses reduced before we can go to the taxpayers and ask for any more money.
We are very poor at delivering government services.
That was Governor J.B. Pritzker, a Democrat, talking last month to the WTTW show Chicago Tonight and Republican State Representatives Grant Worley and Mark Batnick. Getting back to the Department of Corrections audit, here we have a state agency that lost, or at least can't account for, more than 3,500 pieces of equipment worth nearly $3.4 million. That sounds pretty bad, but I think it's worth taking a step back to consider the broader context. That 3,500 pieces of missing equipment is out of a total inventory of 180,000 items. It represents about 2%. Looking at the department's current year budget, it's worth just 0.25%.
That's IPR State House reporter and editor Brian Mackey. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Members of the Bloomington Normal neo-eclectic outfit Third Street Down say winning a couple Battle of the Bands confirmed their retro sound is finding an audience. The quartet will open the GLT Summer Concert in downtown Bloomington June 8th. Band members Austin Willis and Nick Sadoff stopped by the GLT studios earlier this year to talk about their music and ambitions. Willis credits his parents for indoctrinating him into old-school soul music.
Both my mom and my dad are old souls, singing at church, singing around the house, just always listening to things like Stevie Wonder. I remember listening to a Billy Ocean record a lot.
I mean, I hear Al Green and Marvin Gaye and yep. A lot of that and what you're doing here, too. Yeah.
From my few years of experience, it seems like trends come back around. We've been in kind of this era of techno kind of music, you know, a lot of stuff made on computers, things like that, and I got nothing wrong with that.
But you're attracted to this old-style school
right.
a sound. Well, Nick, before we get to the first song I want to talk about, same for you. Are you an old-school solo type of guy, too, or are you...
I'm a different type of old soul. I listen to rock and roll. I'm more of the classic rock kind of guy. I have Bruce Springsteen on in my car right now, you know, so he's the soul. I bring the power, you know, to the music.
Have you seen Springsteen on Broadway yet?
I wish I did.
You've got to go see that. It's on Netflix. Oh, my goodness.
I have watched it on Netflix. I wish I went to go see it in person.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about those influences. You're bringing all of that into what you're doing. I mean, I hear this funk. I hear this soul. I hear acid jazz. Let's play just a little bit of the song Dance here from your new EP.
Caught my attention. It's jeans you're wearing. I saw you staring. So why don't we stop this waste of time? Just dance, move your body to the beat, come on, just dance, let the rhythm move your feet, give me a
First of all, are you aware of the band Brooklyn Funk Essentials?
No, I haven't heard of it.
You've got to check it out. The very first song on the album, compared to this, you'll understand why. This is really cool. This is a great song, by the way.
Thank you. The melody originally came from our keyboardist, Damari. He came up with it around the first year that we started playing together, but we didn't really do anything with it till, was that last year?
Yeah, that was last year.
All right, it's 2019 now, so 2017.
Yeah, 2017,
2017 when we actually started putting words and more music to it. But most of our originals before then had been kind of slower, and we wanted some more upbeat, some more that people could dance to, hence the name, you know.
So when did Dominique enter the picture on this story? I'm talking about V.A. Vast Change, who's rapping on this one.
Me and Dominique have been friends for a long time. I felt like a song like this could use a different element to it. There's a lot of artists that have been pulling in rappers to go in their songs, and songs that aren't even really hip-hop based, and so that's what I was kind of feeling with this. And so I called up Dominique V.A. Vast Change and asked him if he would come over and try to write a verse on it. Just amazing how he quickly just started coming up with ideas in less than 45 minutes he had the verse down, and we were playing it all the way through.
Got a lot of people hating, I ain't worried about tonight. Just the right time for me and you to vibe. Something's in the air, the feeling you can't compare. You better come prepared for your mind to get blown. Now that the band's got you dancing while you're dancing alone. Get your ladies and my fellas, we gon' hop in the zone. It's me and you tonight and we gon' dance to the moon. Don't you worry about what anyone is thinking. Just dance.
The song is called Dance from the new EP Relationship Status. Let's go to Nick Satoff. You guys won a couple of Battle of the Bands.
Yes.
Over the last, what, year or so?
About a couple of years. We went to Tinley Park last year, and we won this like regional little thing that ended up being an opening for a slot at the State Fair down in Springfield. And then we won a slot to open for a group up in the suburbs called the Hat Guys. The first year, our keyboardist Damari had said that they had this Battle of the Bands over at his school in Muncie, Ball State. And so we went over there for the, 10-minute slot that we had over there, and we ended up winning the whole thing. And so,
does that validate what you're doing? Did your guys already know you're kind of onto something? Or did your eyes go, maybe we should really think this through? We've really got something here.
Before we started playing the Battles of the Bands, we were like, okay, we're doing pretty well. And then when we decided we were going to do some Battle of the Bands, we were like, okay, this is going to be to seal it in. If we do well, we're not just like lying to ourselves, not just like playing games in our head. It's like, okay, other people think we're doing well too.
The one up at Tinley Park really opened our eyes, I think, because we went up there with no fan base up there. You know, we had never gone up far that north. And so to get that kind of reaction from random people on the street, I mean, it was a street festival with, you know, a Battle of the Bands on the side. That really opened our eyes.
There's some old school romantic writing on these songs as well. I want to play a little bit of Girl Like You.
I tell you, I ain't never seen. Well, I tell you, I ain't never seen. A girl that does the way she do to me. She's got me running round.
When Dominique Stevenson, V.A. Vast Change, was in last year and we were talking about some of his music, he talked about how spirituality was an essential part of what he's doing. Am I reaching too far that said there's some of that in your music as well?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. There's definitely some deeper thinking behind the songs rather than just words on paper, you know? But not too deep.
Let's play another song from the EP Relationship Status, Looking for a Friend. I want to play just a little bit of this.
So you try to come back, but things ain't the same. You know, people change, and I don't play those games. And what you do is so wrong, but it's been so long. I can't get over this song, and I've been looking for a friend to love. But I remember all the things you've done.
James Montjoy.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't say he rapped on here. He's like the guest speaker, I guess. That's how you put it.
Spoken word.
Spoken word. That's kind of a rap thing.
Yeah.
I did not know James had this in him.
Oh, man. We didn't either. We didn't either.
This is a great story. We used to do the EMAC and Bolio's open mic night down here, and so...
And he ran that.
He ran that, and so we played this song. I think it might have actually been the first time we played it out in front of people.
Looking for a Friend?
Oh, yeah, and so it was just piano, guitar, and cajon. I was on a cajon, and so we're playing it, and James walks over to the microphone and looks at Austin and says, keep going. I thought he was going to make like an announcement, like, thanks for coming, you know, have a good night, but he gets up and does that exact thing that he did on the album. Jaws dropped, and we're all freaking out at this point, going,
what did we just
hear?
How cool is that?
Couldn't leave it out.
Another bad example of outside art. Turn loose on the public and do from the start. Design a side up for me to come off the fence. Letting pull from my pen like from a bottomless pit. Putting smoke in the air and I'm preparing for war. Records speak like that you ain't never heard before. A float of into a stream, a ranger river creates. Not set the lyrical genius, reviving the faith. If you're bobbing your head, then you hear what I say. Now take a moment to reflect where you at, your game. I've been looking for friends and
You mentioned EMAC and Bolio's.
Yes.
And every Wednesday, right? You can go down there and sign up and play.
Right.
Just basically an open mic. How important was that to your development?
Open mics and open jams have been huge for us. Just getting together and playing with other musicians from all different levels of talent and skill, it just has progressed us. Me personally and how I feel, I'm very adamant about
you're the
these
one
open
that,
jams.
He's the one that keeps going out. He goes out, every Thursday?
I try.
And, you know, he goes out as much as he can. He goes over to the Peoria scene, too, to get in some of that. He's pulled some of us over a couple nights a month to go over there and meet all the guys that he's playing with.
And it's great networking.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Great networking.
Austin Willis and Nick Sadoff of Third Street Down speaking with GLT's John Norton. The Funky Quartet opens the GLT Summer Concert June 8th. Also playing is Bloomington's The Something Brothers, Grammy Award-winning Rebirth Brass Band, and headliner Adia Victoria. Discover other local music and hear from artists playing in Central Illinois on the GLT Music Podcast. Find it on NPR One or your favorite podcast app.
Why don't we stop this waste of time and just dance? Move your body to the beat, come on, just dance. Whoa. Let the rhythm move your feet, give me a chance.
You don't know who
don't
I am?
You worry about when I know one thing, just dance.
Fast, change, come on. Listen. Walked in the spot and my eyes locked with the queen. She could be the woman of my dreams. Turn this whole party to a party of two. Walked in with the guys, shorty noticed the crew. And I noticed she's stiff. Tell her, move your body, it's a party tonight. Put a smile on her face. Got a lot of people hating, I ain't worried about tonight. Just the right time for me and you to vibe. Something's in the air, the feeling you can't compare. You better come prepared for your mind to get blown. Now that the band's got you dancing while you're dancing alone. Get your ladies and my fellas, we gon' hop in the zone. It's me and you tonight.
Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org. WGLT.org is where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories with help today from Eric Stock, John Norton, and Mike McCurdy. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is 89.1 at WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media. Dance.